welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. This week, I wanted to share with you a conversation that I had that was actually on an Instagram Live. And I enjoyed the conversation so much because we got to converse about just different aspects of relationship and how those affect us today. And I love this person so much and always love her point of view and the way she sees the world and just her level of understanding and also knowledge and wisdom. She's just a fantastic person. You know, it made me really think about, as I wanted to intro this, about how all types of conversations are so valuable. Like, you know, we have groups of people that we go to for the soul-based relationship. How does the world work? What's going on in politics? What's going on in the news? And let's break down the soul versus the psyche. And, you know, we have maybe one to however many people that we like to go to those zones with, these zones of curiosity and exploration. And it's a safe space to do that. And there's other people that you're not going to have those conversations with, that they might want to stay more on what you might call the surface. And all of it has a place. You know, I think that often I can exhaust myself in wanting to understand the world and wanting to solve all of humanity's suffering and really forgetting that, you know, we also have to be human. We have to take breaks. We have to enjoy bowling just for bowling, or, you know, appetizer is just an appetizer, whatever it is, that we're not always trying to break down the cellular structure of everything and trying to solve problems. And I think this can go to the level of intensity that we often might bring to situations. You know, I know when I was first beginning my personal growth journey, I wanted everyone to understand and see what I was finally seeing, that you don't have to do what things you don't want to do. You don't have to believe things you don't want to believe. You don't have to subscribe to religions or relationships or whatever it is that are not for you. And you get to discern the difference between what you believe and what a group believes. And when you discover that, you so want everyone else to discover that. And I think we forget that it's in honoring our own journey and in honoring other people's that we allow people to be themselves and us to be ourselves. And it's a bit codependent, you know, in a lot of ways, to try to save people, to try to, oh, this piece of information would just allow you to figure that thing out. And we forget that when we're in those situations, we often hear something from a friend and we're like, you know what? Get fucked. I don't want to hear that shit. You know, or like, stop trying to fix me. You know, we get defensive and we can't hear it because we're not ready to. You know, I hear a lot of people say, like, if only I discovered this message 5 years ago, or your podcast 3 years ago, or whatever it is, because we think about a moment where we needed the information that we hear today. But that's only from the level of awareness we have today. The messages that we're all consuming and sharing exist at all times. It's just we're not always listening and we're not always seeking that information. And that's where cognitive bias comes in, that we seek information that validates what we believe. And I really do think it's so valuable to seek information that actually could possibly invalidate what we believe. So with all that said, I guess I just wanted to, I wanted to reinforce that, just take a deep breath. And although there are certainly tons of very serious things going on in the world at all times, don't forget that you also need a break, and you also need to take a breath, and you also get to be human, and you don't have to be everyone's savior, and that you can just show up for yourself, and you can take care of yourself, and you can stop trying to figure out this magical solution to all the problems in the world. Because I think in a lot of ways, letting go and trying to fix everything is one of the solutions. The let go and allow, let go and allow. And that's that balance between trying to control the world and trying to coerce the world, and actually trusting that this universe is perfect. You can't force anything. And there's, you know, the rules of physics that no energy is lost, right? And I think we forget often that, You know, we're just like a tree. We're just like a plant. We're part of this cycle of life. We're part of the energetics that is the planet. This conversation was one of those conversations that was deep and beautiful. And I learned a lot and I enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed what sort of came through me too. And so I wanted to share that with you. And I guess, you know, with me in your ear or wherever you're hearing this from, that this is a conversation we get to have. And so I'm really excited to share this week's convo with Shalina Ayana from Rising Woman on Instagram. And, you know, wherever you listen to this, if you can go give this podcast, go subscribe to the podcast, go give it a 5-star review and a written review. Without further ado, here is this week's combo.
So I don't know what to talk about today. I was kind of thinking we could just dance around and answer some questions and talk about a few things that have been coming up a lot lately in the field of relationship. Sweet. But is there anything that's been coming up for you a lot lately with your audience?
I've been listening to an audio series that's about initiatory processes. And so mm-hmm. I've been really intrigued by that. So, I mean, we could probably get into that, as I'm sure it will come up naturally through the conversation. But I've been really, to me, I think it's such a interesting thing to think that historically we had initiatory processes that allowed us to move from adolescence to adulthood. Really, that's what being good at relationship is about. You know, acknowledging the childhood stuff and the ways we respond, and then becoming an adult. And when there's not an initiatory process that occurs in a community, then, you know, we're sort of brought through the fire in our relationships, which I think is incredibly great. Mm-hmm. And if we don't know that that's what's being asked of us, which is really just to grow up, which is simplifying, and I don't mean to oversimplify it, but yeah, so.
True that. Yeah. It's interesting because I feel like our culture has sort of taken relationships and turned them either into a fairy tale, which is totally unattainable, or they just become these like really unhealthy containers to play out our childhood wounds. But we're not aware of that. We don't know that that's happening. And so relationships just get really chaotic and nobody seems to know why in the moment. They just think that it's their partner and it's that, you know, they chose the wrong person. And so we just keep jumping from person to person to person, and the pattern repeats. And so I think that that's, you know, a big piece of both of our work, is really helping people see that the pattern is within. And, you know, we always will find a person who will sort of fit that pattern perfectly. And if we're coming at it from a conscious intention, which is to do our healing work, then, you know, we can actually work together and go deeper and heal some of those wounds. But if we're in this state of, you know, no responsibility for ourselves and everything exists outside of ourselves, then really what's going to happen is that we're never really going to get to the healing. It's always just going to be, you know, I'm a victim and that person is a bad person, and we just keep cycling through. So I really like to talk about that stuff, and I feel like it's a tough one to recognize in the moment. So I think we should go a little bit deeper on that.
Yeah, you know, I think we come up with thoughts like there's no conscious blah, blah, blah out there, like choose the gender. Yes. There's this city's hard to date in. We come up with all these different, like my Tinder has a virus and I just get narcissists, you know, and we start to do that because we haven't, as you were saying, like become conscious of that our relational, what we might call chemistry even, is drawing us to people who are repeating our childhood experiences. And that, I mean, gosh, people weren't having this conversation even in the field of psychology up until more recently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it shows you how much we've grown in the understanding of the human psyche, which I think psychology is really beginning or continuing to merge with spirituality in a lot of ways, which, mm-hmm. you know, because it's like anything, we can become so disconnected and in our heads, and we can become also too floaty and not grounded. So there's like these two extremes. And it is about the integration of the both. Makes me excited to be part of this conversation because it's everything, you know. Love is why we're here. Connection is why we're here. And we're not taught in school how to do that shit, you know?
I know. It's really interesting. Lately, I've been posting a lot more about, you know, romantic partnership and connection. You know, Ben and I just launched our couples course, so it's sort of been kind of top of mind while we're working with couples. But I've always written about relationship, and I find it interesting that when I talk about relationship from a more, you know, romantic standpoint, people can get upset because they're like, well, you know, I want to be empowered, and like that means that I don't need anybody, and like, how dare you say that, you know, I need another person. And I get that, because, you know, the survivor archetype, which is my primary archetype with my wounding, is like, it's not safe to trust. It's not safe because I've been hurt, I'm traumatized, people weren't safe, nobody ever showed up for me, therefore, you know, I need to do it all on my own. And that's sort of this trauma mindset. It's not reality. Like, if we actually want to heal, what are we healing for? Right? If you're going to go sit on top of a mountaintop and meditate, and you want to be the next Buddha, totally go ahead.
That's fantastic.
Do that. That's awesome. You know, all the power to you. If I could, I probably would, because relationships really hard work.
Yeah. Sometimes I want to go to that mountaintop and be like, I'm tapping out. Social media too, I'm out. Like, just give me a, I'll do some ayahuasca or some mushrooms and sit in a forest.
Yeah. Well, I'll say every time Ben and I get in a fight, I'm like, I don't understand why I'm doing this. Like, why don't I just like go be alone in the forest? Like, this sucks. It's so hard. And I don't need this. I'm an independent woman. But then I'm like, right. Like,
do you do that too?
I can't snap. So I don't, because like, I literally, I can't. Like,
this. Yeah. If you went like this and it made no noise, they would lose any sort of thunder.
Not impressive. So, I just brew silently in my thoughts and, you know,
I know that feeling, you know, when you're, I've been in those conversations where you're like, I don't miss this part of relationship, you know? So, you know, it's like, I liked the world where I was on my own and all my poop was in a group, you know, like that.
All my poop was in a group.
Yeah. Like, you know, getting your shit together.
Right. Yeah.
And I really, to me, that's, it's like you, in so many ways, relationship is a mirror to all the unintegrated things, to all the things you're not good at, but also the desire that someone else might be upset or in relationship to me. And I'm part of that, you know, and the little boy in me who doesn't want to be wrong, doesn't want to not be liked, doesn't want to be in any sort of conflict, has to be acknowledged, but can't be in the driver's seat in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the shutting down. There's no connection. Man, relationships are challenging. And I wish there was a Disney movie that expressed that when I was a kid, because there certainly was. And it was like, you just save a princess from a railway train track or a tower, and she throws her hair down. You don't even have to make a rope. You just climb up her hair and you just save her. And then it's all good.
Everything's perfect.
God.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, the model of relationship we observed just through really what media has marketed more than anything, this breadwinner relationship. And you look at like ads from the 1960s, or you look at our 50s, and you look at even our grandparents' relationships and our parents' relationships a lot of the times. And you kind of go, well, sure, they stayed together, but they didn't really like each other. And that's not true of all relationships from that time, but it's true of a lot of relationships from that time. Yeah. And I think the model of relationship is changing so much, like what we want, what we seek, and what we can get from a love and experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we're wired for connection. What are we doing here? Like, we're, I feel like a lot of us are just here to learn how to be in connection. And it doesn't have to be romantic connection, but relationship in general, you know, that's where we do our healing and that's where we do our deeper work. And when I look back at the history of marriage, for example, women couldn't even have a bank account or have a mortgage or get a car loan until the 60s. So you tell me, yeah,
it's not that long ago.
That's not that long ago. So people were marrying for love in the 1800s, but it was always still security first. So this means
that
relationship has not actually been on equal playing ground. It hasn't been about how can we meet each other. It hasn't been about like, how can we be two whole beings coming together to, you know, serve the world. It's always been about like, how can I get safety and security? How can I own an object of a woman to, you know, feel better about myself? There's not been a lot of space for all different types of relationship to exist, especially where we see marriage as friendship, right? Because that's the highest form of relationship is friendship.
Yes.
Can our partner be our friend?
can we have a deep reverence for them, you know, to have, to see them as a best friend. It's interesting because sort of that honeymoon phase period, you know, and I think in the research they talk about how the honeymoon phase sort of lasts around 3 years and it goes from romantic love to companionate love.
Yeah.
I was really starting to think more about that. Usually I think that cliff occurs because that's when enmeshment and codependency becomes magnified. And so attraction begins to wane, and maybe before that, because there's no space between us and another. And I was rereading The Art of Loving by Eric Fromm.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a line that I don't know why I didn't know this line when I read it the first time, but it was so good. And he talks about how we confuse the feeling of falling in love with being in love.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, isn't that it? That we have this idea that love is chaos and uncertainty. And the really, there is a beautiful nature to being in the patience of uncertainty as a connection unfolds. You know, there is something about figuring out if your worlds match and all of those things. But there's also this really beautiful, when you learn about it and you know it's normal, this sort of feeling of ease and coming home that actually occurs, where it's not, you know, like they actually call when they say they're going to, and that's attractive, you know, like there's so much remodeling that happens in that experience, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I often talk about the difference between, you know, falling into relationship and consciously choosing it, because this is another thing that happens, is where when we don't have those wounds tended to, or we hadn't had those needs met when we were young, we can go out unconsciously seeking those needs to be filled from other people. And often we don't have a baseline for healthy or normal or safe. And our standards are quite low because we're looking for validation and approval. So we're not consciously choosing from qualifying space. We're not going like, does this person have the similar core values as me? You know, do we have shared interests? Do we have, you know, some core philosophies that, you know, match up? You know, would we have the same goals and dreams for lifestyle, things like that? We're not asking those questions when we're coming from a place of the wound, when we're coming from this space of like, I just need to get security and love. And that's a really scary place to operate from, because then we, you know, go through the honeymoon phase, it's all exciting. And then the layers start to unfold and we start to see, I'm back in this pattern again, and it's very unfulfilling.
Yeah, I think of that, you know, there's a recognition all of a sudden, you're like, wait, you're just like every other one I dated, or you're wounding me in a way that's similar, or, and then we start with those beliefs, like there's no good people out there. And we think, you know, we start to think it's fate.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way you could say it's fate, but I would say that it's fate inviting you, you know, to pay attention. It's a choice. You know, in the audio series I'm listening to, it's called The Alchemy of Initiation. He talks about how, you know, Freud talked about this repetition compulsion, that we have this compulsion to repeat things. And I think about that in sort of patterns that are unhealthy, that you keep repeating them because you haven't actually finished the journey. You haven't gathered all the things. You haven't garnered all of the food and nourishment that lives in the pain of the disconnection. And you know, there's a moment where you recognize maybe at the rock bottom of the latest fracture of whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And you actually say, okay, what is actually here? How did I get here? And how do I never get here again? What would the wisdom in this moment ask of me?
Yeah.
And what I love about that is then there is a coming home with the gift. And in doing that, you don't have to go back out on the same fucking journey and call it fate or call it. And you start to see that love. I think as you create more love and safety within yourself, then you realize that it's a red flag when it's not.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally. Love it. I love that you're going on that journey too, because it's so much my story as well, to like repeat patterns and think I'm done, and then to find myself in that pattern again and be like, huh, oh, there's a whole
goddamn
here. Yeah, but you know what's cool about it is that every single time I meet a new part of that pattern, it's like there's this deeper teaching for me, and I feel more integrated every single time. And I think that if we're using our experiences as medicine, you know, we're not playing a helpless victim to the patterns of your relationships, then real magic can happen, right? That is where the alchemy occurs. And that's kind of what I think both you and I are teaching, is you can't change another person. You can't fix them. You can't convince them to do the work. And yeah, sometimes people are shitty, but if you're doing the work and if you truly feel safe and secure within yourself, then you're going to have a much higher chance of being able to qualify other people and to be able to set boundaries and to be able to hold a really high standard for how people love you and how people show up for you.
Amen to that. Yeah. Journey of going and gathering more information and repeating the pattern, I was thinking about how the very things that garner the most wisdom, like, let's say, divorce or a breakup, or choosing to question your religion, being kicked out of your community or your religion or your culture or your family because of a choice you've made in your life. Maybe you chose infidelity. Maybe you did these things that create actually a large amount of shame. And they're not actually the reason someone should be isolated and kicked out, because in those experiences, those people are usually the greatest researchers, because they're the ones who learn, like, why did the relationship end? What is the wisdom you garnered in the pain of the experience? And it's interesting to me that our communities are often structured in a way that we kick that person out when that actually what they need in that moment. And I think this is what, you know, everyone on this live and on our each of our communities, which I'm sure we have a lot of crossover, is we are actually a community that says, welcome back.
Yeah.
You actually aren't broken. Your divorce is not a reason you should be exiled. It actually should be a reason that you should come home.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to really see that the things that garner the most wisdom are usually the things that cause exile from communities and families and systems that haven't actually explored their own shadow, mm-hmm. that actually haven't matured in some sense. You know, in that audio, he talks about how people are, we live in a sibling society, like a bunch of adolescents. And it's so true how we run our corporations, how we, our governments treat us like children, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I agree with you. That's a big piece of my book that I'm writing right now, is all about our rock bottom moments and how those are usually like the most powerful teachings for us. And, you know, we've been taught not to, you know, share our deepest vulnerabilities. We've been taught to keep secrets. We've been taught that it's not okay to, you know, have a divorce or, you know, to end the relationship, because our model of success looks one way. It's, you know, get a job, get a nice car, have a family, be married, own a house, and like have all of the materials. And if you have problems about, you know, if you have emotional issues or if you have problems inside of the relationship, just don't say anything. Don't tell
anyone. Don't say anything. That won't help. No. You might end the relationship. Don't do that.
And that would be the worst thing ever, because of course you're not whole and complete unless you have a partner. And I think that's where people get confused when I'm writing sometimes, because I'm constantly saying like, hey, you're already whole and complete. And relationship is the most beautiful gift you could ever give yourself. But we're coming into relationship whole and complete. We're not coming into relationship as half a person, right? So we're not coming to people saying, hey, I'm incomplete and I need you to complete me, because otherwise I'm just not safe or whole in the world. It's different. So when we come into relationship from that space of I am whole and complete, and I know that I'm also worthy of giving and receiving love, I'm brave and courageous enough to open my heart and to share that love rather than to let my stories from the past harden me and keep me separate from love. You know, that's true healing. The ego always wants to stay separate. The ego always wants you to be alone, because that's where it's safest. If you're not vulnerable, you can't get hurt. And if you can't get hurt, you won't die. And on a primal level, I think that's what we're deeply afraid of, is like this, not just like literal death that we completely sweep under the rug in our culture, but divorce is a death, right? Mm-hmm. Breakup is a death.
Yeah.
And we're so afraid of endings.
We are terrified of endings. And I think that's what coronavirus has really brought up for us, mm-hmm. is the reality of our mortality. So much so that we're actually, in my opinion at least, ignoring a lot of the really clear data you know, and making these very, you know, the toilet paper was a real good example of what we can be like when we haven't processed or come to terms with, like, we're so afraid of dying with a dirty butthole. You know, that's the, like, that we started, you know, hoarding it, which is really incredible, you know? And as you said, like, when we haven't just one recognized that, you know, it's interesting because our pain and our trauma and our suffering makes us think that no one is broken like me, right? Mm-hmm. And so it causes this isolation of self and actually an identity, I'm unworthy or no one will understand me. And so in a way, and I use this word in an odd way, but there's like a narcissism often to our pain. Mm-hmm. And then it causes this isolation. And when actually all of us are wounded, all of us experience suffering, all of us experience different levels of trauma. And so this isn't to dismiss that, but it's to say that that's actually what bridges us, not what isolates us.
Yes.
Which is really interesting because, as you were saying earlier, our culture doesn't actually acknowledge that, like divorce, things like that. So then why would I be able to acknowledge it in myself? You know, it's kind of like if your parents never take responsibility for anything. Look, if our governments don't take responsibility for bullshit, then why would we? It's not modeled for us. So in order to be in a good relationship, we have to start to take responsibility for ourselves and how our pain shows up in our relationships and even how it contributes to who we choose. Gosh, because that's, you know, as you were saying, if you don't recognize your wholeness, you'll seek someone else to complete you, and then you'll be afraid to lose them. So you'll never have the conversations that might end the relationship, even though they're actually the very ones that deepen the relationship. And so you're caught in this paradox where you're like, I want to be all of me and be authentic, but I'm afraid if I am, this relationship will fracture. And I say fracture it or deepen it. You know, that's the choice you're in that moment, because the relationship based on two actors pretending to be someone else is not free. It's not in any way expansive. Mm-hmm. And you have to completely, in some ways, be willing to risk the eruption of your relationship to make it one where you're free to be authentic.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to be willing to take a risk, you know, and choose yourself. And that's what always takes me aback when I talk to people and I say, hey, you know, just bring yourself and be self-expressed and ask for what you want. And also know that they have no obligation to give you that. And if they can't, it's okay. You know, that's okay. And they say, well, what if they say no though? Well, then you know that that's not the right path for you. And so I think, again, it comes down to this lack of trust that we're going to be okay, right? Because many of us haven't had safety and security, or we do think that, you know, we're inherently broken and flawed because so much of our programming is, you know, old religious programming that we're not even aware of. Many of us have no identification with religion, and yet our programming is religious. It's this idea that, like, we're born broken, right? We're all born sinners. That's what, like, I was taught when I was young.
I mean, that's because Eve ate the apple. Without that, I mean, well, how does that place women too, right? Even that story of origin is...
Yeah. Yeah.
Not thumbs up. I mean, ow. It's a great thumbs story up. Of origin.
Yeah, you know, when I was doing my training, we did these shadow work containers and we would all meet up for 3 hours a week in a room, just dark little room with barely any windows. And we'd sit around in a circle as the same people every week. And we would do shadow work. We would reveal those, you know, dark corners of our minds, and we would reveal secrets. And we would just be really brutally honest about some of our, you know, hateful thoughts or our judgmental thoughts or the parts of ourselves we don't love. And then we would work to integrate them. And one of the things that we would do is this suffering competition. And it was literally a competition to show off how much we've suffered and compared to other people. So our teacher would start off by saying, okay, so raise your hand if you think you've suffered more than anybody else in the room. And then everybody would have their hand raised. And we'd be looking around the room and just already you're laughing because you're like, wow, of course, I think I've suffered more than you. And everybody thinks that. And then we would just have a competition and we would start to reveal, you know, I've suffered more than you because, and we would all tell our stories. And by the end, you know, everybody is broken open. We're people are crying, people are feeling so much empathy, people are like busting their own stories that they've suffered more because the person next to them went through something so horrific and they're still here and they're beautiful people. And we're just like, wow, what a story I'm carrying that my pain makes me separate, right? Yeah. It's like the human condition. And so if we were just more honest and vulnerable, we would have such better and healthier relationships. But it's those very things that we keep hidden away and then we can't get close to people.
Yeah. And in that righteousness of the pain, which creates a hierarchy with ourselves and other people where they can't meet us. And in a way, we don't want them to meet us because it means being loved and being met and being. And also, I think letting go, it might sound weird, but it's not ever to dismiss someone's suffering, but to say to let go of the righteousness of the suffering mm-hmm. allows you to be actually on a level with everybody. And when you recognize, you know, the common human experience of pain, then now, and you recognize it within yourself, then now you can recognize it in another. And they might not even recognize that their pain is not necessarily unique and not necessarily a reason to isolate. Just by being you and having done that process, you hold a space or a reference point for them to come back to that mutuality. And mm-hmm. and really, I think that's how community is created, you know?
Yeah.
That we're having this conversation, and maybe for some people, it's the first time they've heard this humanized, that it's like, oh, wait, it's actually normal to experience this. It's normal to actually not know what the fuck you're doing in relationship. I think when you get that, you know, anyone who says they have it all figured out, run from them.
Yeah, they're lying.
Right, because every time I'm like, oh, I think I got it. It's like, universe is like, you don't got shit. Like,
hope you enjoyed your 24-hour pass. Back on your ass.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
The 20, yeah, it was a good run you had for a moment there where you thought you were, you thought you had it together and now you know.
That's how it feels for me. Like, Ben and I will be like on this high, you know, be like, oh, like, we really got this thing. Like we got our conscious relationship figured out. Like we don't fight anymore. Our communication is so good. And like we're having all these great breakthroughs. Everything's so good. And then it's like back a few steps, starting over. And I'm like, why am I in relationship at all? I should just go live in the mountains and be alone.
Of course, the other person in the mountains is like, don't come here. This is my mountain. I need silence. I don't want to enter a relationship. I went to the mountain to get away from them. And I mean, that really shows us how important, you know, you talk about this too all the time, that like if your wounding occurs in relationship, that's where you got to heal it. We can have all our shit together when we are alone and single. And I don't have to, like, who I am is not bumping up against who someone else is. What I want is not bumping up against what someone else wants. But how do two people be in love and still be free? That's ultimately the goal, right? Is because I think about the structure of how relationship is communicated from a media, you know, all the influences for us. And just how we treat people who've been divorced, we say, so we sort of have a hierarchy of relational status. If you're married, you're better than someone who's engaged, you're better than someone who's dating, you're way better than someone who has that awful illness of singleness. And then if you're divorced, you're sort of put below that. And then we also have a hierarchy of length. So the longer you've been together, the more credit we give you. And certainly, relational length is some measure of relational success, but there are plenty of people who've been together for 75 years who fucking hate each other. So that's not, you know, it's not always that, but we don't celebrate relational depth. Mm-hmm. We just celebrate status and length. And what's interesting about that is because relationship status is celebrated, then we put our worth in whether we're in a relationship. We ask people, hey, are you, why are you single? Like they have a ailment, and, right? And what it reinforces is you don't have someone who's chosen you. So are you worthy of being chosen? There's no evidence of it. So we seek relationship to make it so no one asks us that anymore, right? To fulfill, someone has validated us, which I think occurs a lot more so for women. The messaging is for sure there to say, and also for women to hold together relationships, to overfunction for the underfunctioning, that that men often have because we don't have emotional development. We're not encouraged to be emotional. And I think in a lot of ways, based on the structure of relationship that we've inherited, men overfunction in the providing space and women overfunction in the emotionality and the community aspect space. And, you know, it's this idea that, you know, I was saying, like, because we're afraid of a relationship ending because we will be kicked out of our community, we don't have conversations and we personally don't exist in a way that might end a relationship. And I thought about that line from Harriet Lerner's book, Dance of Intimacy, where she says, if you're not free to come and go from, if you can't live without the relationship, then you're not free to leave it. Like if, you'll never be free to be yourself in the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's so true. If you believe that your safety exists in the relationship status, which it very often does, and as you were saying earlier, marriage evolved to create new, more in-laws. It was not based on love. It was based on, you know, women could have bank accounts. They couldn't vote. Yeah. You know,
it was based on poverty.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it very much was a way to, how do I survive?
Yeah.
And so then you look at what we want today from a relationship and it's like, why do I have such a hard time asking for what I need? Oh my God. Yeah, of course, because you've been evolutionary programmed for thousands of years to not be too much. Mm-hmm. And men are like, I don't understand why my partner, and I'm speaking heteronormatively, don't know how to, I don't know why they want to talk all the time and why I don't have the words for my feelings. Well, you've been severed and castrated from your feelings for thousands of years. You know, so it's like, we're doing fucking hard work now, you know,
this shit
isn't simple. This shit is hard. And the book is called Dance of Intimacy by Harriet Lerner.
Yeah. She's one of my
favorites.
Yeah. So I love her.
She's so good.
Yeah. I just interviewed her. Actually, we did a little YouTube video. It's on the Rising Woman YouTube. We talked about the mother-daughter relationship. I loved her book, The Dance of Anger, too. I thought it was really, really good. It got through that one in like 2 days. I couldn't put it down.
She's fire.
Yeah, you know? she's great.
Straight fire.
Yeah.
She also has a book now on forgiveness. I think that just
came out. Why won't you apologize?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw her give a talk once on forgiveness, and it was incredible.
Yeah, she's wonderful. You know, it's interesting what you were talking about there. That idea of like, if you're not free, if you need the relationship so much that you can't be yourself, you know, you can't exist without the relationship. I've noticed that lately there's like a lot of memes flying around on these like relationship sites, but they're very disempowering. And I'm curious about who's writing these things. Cause there was one where it was like these slides and it was like signs you're in the wrong relationship. And the first one was like that they forget important events. And I was like, okay, well, my husband forgets anything if I don't put it in the calendar. And the next one was like, they could go a whole day without talking to you. Like if a person can go a whole day without talking to you, you're in the wrong relationship. And I was like, this is like the most codependent, disempowering thing I've ever heard. Like when my husband goes away on trips with his guys, and this is like a monthly occurrence, I'm so excited to have the house to myself. And we don't text. We barely
you must
text.
Not love him then.
We're in the wrong relationship.
Right.
But it's so interesting, right? Because people are like, oh, are you going to miss them? I'm like, well, not really. Like, it's 3 days and it's our time to be apart and enjoy ourselves. And, you know, we'll text each other goodnight maybe, but we don't talk on the phone or anything. I'm in my world and he's in his. And I think it's interesting that we have these misconceptions that, you know, if you're separate in any way from your partner, if you're not attached at the hip or if you don't desperately need them, that there's something wrong. It's like, we don't know how to just be two individuals sharing a path, you know, supporting each other. Instead, it's like, what am I going to get from you? What are you going to give me? Like, let me drain you of all of your energy. Like, just, it's weird.
Like you and, complete me.
Yeah. I think that that's why I'm so passionate about relationship and teaching about it. Because I think, I mean, freedom is one of my core values. I know this is really important to me, and it's been really beautiful to build a conscious relationship with someone who also, you know, we can come together and go deep, and we can also, you know, be apart and be, you know, we have other things to focus on, which is service. I think that one of the highest forms of relationship is two people coming together and they make each other better so that they can go out into the world and serve more and give more rather than draining each other like batteries, you know?
Yeah, agreed. I think there's a, when you value your own time, space, and individuality, then you will value, respect, and encourage your partner's time, space, and individuality. You know, and that's, we were talking earlier about how Disney movies give us this idea of unrealistic about relationships. And certainly even this idea that you have to abandon your dreams for somebody, like the model of relationship that we learned from was basically self-abandonment and codependency for mm-hmm. both sides. And so it's interesting now we have to learn the skills of how to be a whole self. You know, and that's what boundaries do, is they just draw a line around who you are. They preserve your wholeness. But if you don't know who you are, then you don't know where to place the boundary. Mm-hmm. And boundaries are so healthy within a relationship because they say, I love you enough to tell you this, what I need from you. Yeah. And I encourage you to have boundaries too. Now, to receive a boundary is a whole different avenue than declare one. Because when you receive one, you have to process all the stuff about yourself too. Yeah. So you're like, did I hurt them? Did I not? How does that make me feel? And I've really, instead of, you know, where people relate to attachment styles and they say mm-hmm. things like, I'm anxiously attached or avoidantly attached or secure or whatever. I always encourage them. It's like, it's not about the relationship, the closeness to the other person so much as it's mm-hmm. about the space between us and another. So like, if you're anxiously attached, you don't like space between you and another. And if you're avoidantly attached, you need space between you and another. And both of those serve as a way of protecting ourselves, as opposed to the space of being a place where we nourish ourselves. That's a totally different way of being, which secure attachment really is about.
Yeah. And the whole attachment styles thing is interesting because there's no static attachment style in my experience. Like I've met a few people Amen. Who are like consistently across the board anxious in all relationships.
Yeah, I was pretty good at being avoidant for a while. Static.
Yeah. Yeah. So some people stay static, but also like based on who we're in relationship with, it can shift, right? Like yeah. I've noticed I can go in and out of, you know, all sorts of different attachment styles. My kind of default tends to be avoidant now. It used to be anxious. But now if I'm feeling really stressed and I'm in reaction mode, it's avoidance, not anxiety. So I think it can shift, but I also like to encourage people not to identify too much with yeah. those terms. Like I'm anxious, attachment, and that's how it is. Well, no, I mean, you can grow into secure. And part of that is by actually choosing people who want to do that with you, like who are secure and who want to, you know, co-regulate with you. It's nervous system work. This idea that we're going to be, you know, trapped as an anxious or avoidant attachment for the rest of our lives doesn't have to be true.
No. And that's, I think, the challenge with a lot of psychological language is the although understanding a label can be important because we finally put a construct to something that we've been never able to figure out, eventually you realize that a label can become a prison too, because we've become attached to the security of the label. And the dance of avoidance or anxiety is familiar. That's why it's so easy to pivot between the two, because you can just go from I love you, I need you, and then mm-hmm. oh shit, you're real close, you need to back yeah. up, you know.
Yeah.
And you start to, you know, when someone was asking about how do you become securely attached? Well, secure attachment is really like my partner's needs matter as much as my own, not mm-hmm. more than my own. That's anxious, not less than my own. That's avoidance. Mm-hmm. So it's really just about discovering who you are, discovering how to have healthy conversations. Not having conflict is not a sign of a healthy relationship. It's how we handle conflict that indicates the health of a relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And that's what my work has been in my partnership for as long as we've been together. It's all been about learning how to dance in the space of conflict in a more healthy and secure way.
Hardest work. Hey, it's like my nervous system is like, fuck this. And I'm yeah. like, I love you. You know, it's like a yeah. this weird juxtaposition. And it's interesting because it's the same sort of thing we're being asked to recognize in terms of how we isolate ourselves is, we are both biological and have a spiritual experience. And I think of a line that Ram Dass quotes a lot, which is from, I think it's from Christ. And it's mm-hmm. that to be in this world, but not of this world. Mm-hmm. And I think we can often forget about the human experience, like that we are biological, that we have nervous systems, that we are reactive, that we can, you know, we have anger, we have all these different things. And we think that if we hit some sort of spiritual plane, we will be free from all of these things. And, you know, we talk about, you know, in more Buddhist language, that anger is wrong or bad. You know, I heard yesterday that anger is sad's bodyguard. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really cool way of thinking about it, but recognizing that we actually need anger, and that anger can be clean and really transformative. I mean, look at the Me Too movement, look at the Women's March, you know, look at actually that there's, although we are experiencing a crazy time right now with the pandemic, we also have liberties that are being taken from us. And so can we actually experience the emotional response of what it's like to lose liberties? I mean, that's a big deal. And I always say to people, like, don't forget the things you give away right now, because we know so often, like, you're from Vancouver, so you know what I'm talking about. When the Vancouver Olympics came, this they were like, we're going to raise the cost of parking in all of Vancouver, but don't worry, when the Olympics are done, we'll lower the cost again. Of course they don't. And I feel like I fear that that might be what might occur today. And that scares me, of course, because right now we're in such uncertain times. And if you're not anxious right now, I don't know how you're doing it. Mm-hmm. I think some like small level of anxiety is pretty helpful is pretty normal because collectively we're experiencing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, we're so conditioned to distance from emotion and to make certain emotions wrong. I think, like you're saying, anxiety is a bit of an alarm bell. Like, hey, something isn't quite right here. And anger, as the ad's bodyguard, as you said, is so true, because what we do is we come out to defend whatever is most, you know, tender and vulnerable underneath the surface. So somebody who is really, you know, externally maybe arrogant or, you know, aggressive or rude, those people are often the most sensitive and insecure. So totally. it's interesting because people don't get that like whatever is on the outside, it's usually the opposite inside that they're protecting. Mm. Right. And so that's why, true. You know, when we talk about conflict, being in the space of conflict with anyone, our gut reaction is to react, right? It's to defend. But actually, if we take a breath, if we pause, if we're with it for a moment, we start to see, oh, what's underneath that anger? It's fear of being rejected. It's fear of being abandoned. It's this hurt little part of me. I feel humiliated right now. I don't want them to see that they hurt me. That's way too vulnerable. So I'm going to bare my teeth instead. I'm going to sink my claws into them. And so this is this like reaction that we've learned to use in order to protect ourselves. And so if we can actually be aware of it, then we can say things like, hey, I need to take a moment here. I'm feeling really defensive, you know, and that in itself is like a signal to our partner, like, oh, I poked something in them. Like I just triggered a wound there and they're feeling defensive. Maybe I can calm my own nervous system. And we have to like start to use these types of language, these types of words, and use these sentences that will alert our partner that, hey, I'm not okay. And maybe it's too vulnerable to say, you know, ouch, that hurt. Maybe you just need to say what you're feeling. I'm feeling angry right now. I'm feeling defensive. I'm feeling like shutting down, you know, I want to just run away right now, but I'm just going to stay here for a moment. I just need to take a breath.
What a bridge that is. Yeah. What a bridge that is. You know, all of our responses in conflict that are not helpful, like defensiveness, criticism, rolling your eyes, you know, all of those stonewalling, withdrawing, all of those things, when we come to the realization that all of those are actually just ways of protecting us from being hurt, there's a compassionate moment there. I love what you said, because we, in the moment where we're triggered, if we choose an alternate response, which can just be a request for a moment, we are now in a moment we've never been in a conflict. Yeah. And so we will get deeper and deeper, and we learn to regulate our nervous systems in those moments where, because of course, flooding, when I used to get into conflict, I would get so flooded that I couldn't use my voice. My body would be so flooded. My brain was shut down. And I was like, I have so many sentences going on in me right now, and I just couldn't get them from wherever they were to And when I was, I'm a for sure a recovering defender, defensiveness was my jam and still sometimes is. Mm-hmm. And when I read the antidote from the Gottmans for defensiveness is to say, I can see some truth in what you're saying. And I was just like, I remember in the one conflict, my friend saying to me, you're being defensive right now. And I was like, I can see some truth in what you're saying. And I was like, it felt like my self-worth was taking a big hit because behind, as you were saying, behind the defensiveness and the reactivity was actually sadness and a feeling of unworthiness. So yeah. It was the opposite. And in that moment, though, what I recognized is I was now in a bridge of a conversation where normally I threw a wall up and withdrew. And I'd never been there before, not at least that I could consciously remember. Mm-hmm. And our friendship continued to go deeper and deeper. And mm-hmm. and that was such a cool thing to experience, that when you learn to heal your ways of protecting yourself from being hurt, you actually build more connectedness and you end up in spaces you've never been in. And then you recognize that relationships can be a way that you've never known, mm-hmm. that you can now finally, like, everything you dreamt of, that your soul called you towards in love, is possible because you've put down the arms and said, mm-hmm. connection is more important to me than being right now. And that's why I think humility is probably the greatest trait in a relational partner. And, you know, I didn't always have a lot of it, and sometimes I struggle to have it, but it's, again, a protective mechanism. And I've really been... I'm always so impressed when my partner in conflict is so, when she handles some feedback and is like, you're right. And I'm like, I never used to hear that as a young person in relationship. You know, I'm like, I'm right. What is happening?
Yeah. Totally. Well, it's a good way to diffuse an argument too, if you're not doing it sarcastically. Yes. That's not the whole other thing, but which I'm guilty of having done to my partner. But when you do it from a really, humble place, then it can change things, right? And I think that you're right. Humility is such a beautiful trait. I really admire that trait in other people because I think that it really allows us to connect. And even in myself, you know, when I did those multiple years of deep, deep shadow work and really got in touch with my armor, right? Which was my, like, I'm not good enough. People don't love me. People will hurt me, or people don't like me. So I don't want anyone to get in. So even my friendships couldn't go deep, you know? And for me to see those walls, one of my defensive mechanisms was just to judge in my mind. I could just judge people as better or worse. And that way I didn't have to get close. And so kind of dropping those judgments allowed me to come into deeper relationship with people that I wouldn't have been able to get close with before. And so as a result, my community connections have just grown tenfold because, you know, I can go deep with these people that maybe weren't safe before. So I think when it comes to humility, it's, you know, it's looking at our minds, looking at our judgments, looking at, you know, all of the ways that we use judgment for separation. And that is what's going to bring us deep and we'll have happier lives because of it.
Amen to that. You know, if you learn how to be good at romantic relationships, which anyone can learn because it's just skills, they're just skill sets. All of your relationships will thrive and your life will thrive, and the health benefits of being good at relationships, or, you know, being able to navigate conflict well, not only will be very predictive of outcomes in your workplace and things like that, or as a parent, but they'll be incredibly predictive of your health and the, you know, even cognitive decline and all of these things. And that's why the work is so important. And there was a line in Eric Fromm's book, The Art of Loving, where he said, there is not one thing that humans fail at more than love, yet do not take the time to learn. And I thought, and he talks about how if it was anything else, we would take the time to learn mastery. And, you know, mastery, we can all become relational masters. I know that you and Ben just put out a couples course, so that's perfect timing. Because, you know, if you're ready for some shadow work, get ready. If you're ready to learn your patterns. I mean, if you're on this live, then you're already asking these questions. Yeah. Which is beautiful. Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is awesome. I feel like
you so much.
Go all day. We'll wrap it up. Thank you to everybody who joined. Let's do this again soon.
Yeah, let's have you over on my channel. Thank you so much for having me. I love you. I appreciate you. And this will be saved. I'll share it on my channel too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Love you, darling. Thanks. Okay, have a beautiful day. And bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. If this episode resonated with you, one of the best ways to support the show is to go subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any more. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, or share the episode with your community on Instagram or whatever social place you like to hang out. This helps get it into more people's ears, and I'm so grateful for your support always. Thanks again for tuning in. Much love.